Shus Marina, Rav Shlita. It's nice to see so many young people here today. This is obviously democracy. Democracy at its best. Well, we've had three important elections in the last month or so. We've had the Israeli general elections, we had the British general elections, and we've had elections for the Board of Management in this shul. So, FIFA. Oh well, we won't go down that road. And there's the interesting, obvious question as to what role does democracy play in halacha, in Jewish life, to the extent that, you know, is democracy such a wonderful thing? How America was saying how important it is for Iraq and some other countries like Egypt have democracy, and in came the Muslim Brotherhood, and they're obviously realizing that they made a bit of a mistake. And we have to understand that democracy was something which brought in some really nasty regimes. Hitler got in by democracy. Hamas got in by democracy. Abbas, there was what's called the Salem witch trials in 1692 in America, where the will of the people was one of hysteria, accusing all sorts of people of being witches and putting them to death. So democracy surely needs to be balanced against something else, and we have the luxury of the Torah to guide us. Certainly Jefferson in the USA Declaration of Independence recognized that perhaps there may be shortcomings to democracy, and he spoke about the inalienable rights which were endowed by the Creator, he said. And so that if a democracy comes along and makes sorts of weird rules, then democracy has to be overcome. If a tyrant, a fascist, would be elected in this country, in fact the Queen would have the power to get rid of him. So there you get the idea of the monarchy. So the question comes up, forgive my voice, it's a bit bad today. So the question comes up as to what is the approach that the Torah takes to the kind of civil legislation which might happen. That you have obviously your Beis Din, you've got your rabbinical guidance, and you've got the shoftim, the judges, but how does it work when it comes to a civil form of legislation? And the Torah actually comes along and says in Parshat Shoftim, Ki sovav el haaretz asher Hashem latecha nosilach, when Hashem gives you your land and you come into it, shafta bo, v'omarta osimo olai melech kachol hagoyim, and you will say, well, we want to have a king like the other nations of the world have a king, so we want to have a king. And then the pasuk says, som tosim olecho melech, olecho melech, you will appoint for yourself a king, asheiv cha Hashem lakecho bo. But there's a phrase that that king has the backing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mikerev achecho, he will be one of you. So there are certain qualifications which this king will need. And then tosim alecho melech lo suchar lo seis alecho ish nochri, etc. So there you have a din min ha-Torah, what seems to be a din from the Torah, to appoint a king. Is the Torah therefore saying that in addition to having a theocracy where you run your country on Torah lines, you will have a king, a monarchy? Or is that incumbent on you, or can you choose some other form of running the country like a republic? What is the approach that the Torah is taking? It seems that the Torah is stipulating a form of monarchy. And the Rambam actually brings this down in Hilchos Melachim Perek Aleph, that there are three mitzvahs which the Jews are commanded when they enter the land of Israel. Number one, to choose a king, as it says, Son to Simolech or Melech. Number two, to get rid of Amalek. And number three, to build a Beis HaMikdosh. So the first one listed by the Rambam is to appoint a king. But is that really the case? Indeed, if we look ahead in Tanakh, in Shmuel Aleph, there in Perek Ches, it talks about the elders of Israel gathering, and they come to Shmuel HaNovi in Ramah, and they say to him, look, behold, you have grown old, your sons do not walk in your ways, please set up for us a king. We will have a king to judge us just like the other nations of the world have a king. And Shmuel HaNovi was very unhappy about this. He was saying, well, I'm not sure if this is the right thing for you. And they were saying, give us a king to judge us. and he davened to Hashem, he was displeased. And Hashem was displeased. Now, how is it possible that Shmuel HaNovi can be displeased about the people wanting to appoint a king, where Hashem also seems unhappy about it, where the Torah itself says, you should appoint for yourself a king? If the Torah says you appoint for yourself a king, and the Rambam brings this down that this is the first thing you do when you come into Eretz Yisrael, why was Shmuel HaNovi so unhappy about the people wanting to have a king?
So, but doesn't it enter what the people, it's a bit like second best, where the people will say, like king, like,
right?
Hashem says, point the king.
That is what's given to us as a hint in the Pasuk, Va'omar Toh. When it says you come to the land and you inherit it, Va'omato Simalai Melech, so this expression is, it doesn't say Vasamto Olecho Alechem Melech, and you shall point. It starts with Va'omato, where the people are expressing something from their own desire, that they would like to have a monarchy, a figurehead. And so Hashem, as there's a machlokis Rishonim about this, but Hashem seems to be saying, you want to have a king? Okay, have a king. But it's not v'samto, and you shall place upon yourself a king. We do know that the Malchus is belonging to Shevet Yehuda, and there is a question, as there have been certain kings who were not from Shevet Yehuda, Shaul, the first king, and later on there were the Hasmoneans who made themselves in charge, but the Ramban says that they were punished, they disappeared because they were not from Shevet Yehuda. But it was, the explanation seemed to be that once Shevet Yehuda started with Malchus, then it had to carry on with them. But the question we're first asking is, what is the incumbent thing about having to have a king? Is it necessary or is it not necessary? There were some hundreds of years passing from the time that we entered Eretz Yisrael with Yehoshua until the first king Shaul was appointed. So we managed quite well for all those years until Shmuel, and then there was this whole voice coming along, we want to have a king.
So, not that they want to be like all the other nations.
Ah.
There's no point having a king, but to do it because they want to be like them, that's exactly wrong.
Right. So the Mephoshim explain this, that the reason why that Shmuel was unhappy was because people were asking for a king kechor hagoyim, like all the other nations, where they felt like they were dispensing with their shoftim, the batei din, who were running the country on Torah lines, and that the idea of the Torah was that in tandem with each other, you will have your rabbonim, your batei mishpat, your batei din on the one hand, and for your civil administration, and when it comes to going for war, and you need a minister for war, and you need someone to impose taxes. So for that, you'll have a king. But then there is no conflict between the two. What the people were asking for at the time of Shmuel was to dispense with the first element. We just need to have a monarchy and a king like the others, and that's what made Shmuel unhappy. We cannot dispense with our Torah values, but within the context of the Torah values, it's possible to have a civil administration in the form of a monarchy. Hence, the Rambam lists this as one of the things you do when you enter Eretz Yisrael. But other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam. And already when you look at the Mephoshim of the Pasuk, and what is going on with this Pasuk, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about this in the fourth chapter, where there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nehoroi, where Rabbi Yehuda says you appoint a king when you go into Eretz Yisrael, you do away with Amalek and you build a Beis HaMikdosh, but Rabbi Nehoroi is saying, well, wait a minute, it says the word Va'amarto. Va'amarto means that there is a desire coming from the people, and it is not incumbent on us to have that king. It's just that if the people want it, and Rashi explains this, and the Sifri goes into the point that it may be a genai, a disgrace on the Jewish people to have to appoint a king kechol hagoyim, to be just like the other nations of the world. So how do we reconcile this if the Rambam says it's incumbent on us to have a king? So comes along the Ram in a drosha, in his 11th of his droshas, and he looks at this and he says, we know that it's a natural inclination of people to want to have a monarch. They want to have a figurehead. So they have this king that they appoint. And if you don't have some form of person, person in charge, then you have the danger of anarchy, of people doing whatever they want, and they'll be rioting and they'll be looting, and that you need law and order. And that law and order is not really necessarily put into place by your Beis Din, who are there to paskan on matters of halacha. That law and order can be placed in the hands of a civil administration, of a king, but it hasn't got to be a king, he says. He says, Yisrael Tzrich and Zeke, yes, almost, that we may well need it, and that you might have Chaim below, where people will have anarchy and they will start making a mess of things. But the idea is that you will have an authority in charge which can implement punishment for breaches of law, where the Beis Din may decide on Chia Chayav Malkus or Chayav Mises Beis Din, etc., where people are transgressing the Chukei HaTorah, but you may have that civil administration which is in charge in order to implement that. And things can be according to the Tzurach HaShoah, according to the time in which one is living. Kafi Tikkun Seder Medini, according to the way that country is inclined. And so he says, if they want it to implement these rules, like rules Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, and that it should be Mitzadah Malchus, then fine. And we've got this lesson from Shmuel Aluf, Yiskabsu Kozik Nei Yisrael. But they were wanting both systems under the king, and that was their mistake. He says, what is necessary is to have the Bote Din and to have the Malchus. But even that Malchus is not directly necessary if your administration might be in some other form. And this is brought out more by the Netziv in the Emek Dovar, in his Perush on this, in Devarim Yud Zayin Yud Dalet, where it talks about Son Tosim Olecho Melech. He says, this of Omarto, and you shall say, is something to be taken kumashmo in the way you got the Omarto somewhere else. So he says, V'omarto ochlo vosor, when people wanted to have meat, so Hashem says, and you say that you want to have meat, because on Tahai, as long as it's kosher, you can have your meat. But it's not that the Torah is saying you have to eat the meat. In Talas Nafshecho Lechol Bosor, if your heart desires it, then Gazon Tahait, you can go and eat it. So he says the Loshen of V'omarto is, if you want to have the king, okay, Gazon Tahait, choose your king. And you can elect him in a democratic way. Or as the Rambam says, that the Shoftim will appoint him. And they have been elected. So there's a form of democracy there. But it's not that you have to go that way. He says it's a form of reshus. Ein ze mitzvah b'muchla. It's not a mitzvah directly. Limnos melech, to actually appoint a king. El reshus, just like you have reshus to eat meat. And he says the nature of different countries over time change, and they want to have different kinds of administration, so it's perfectly reasonable not to have a king at all, if you don't want to have a king, but to appoint some other, as long as you have, as he says, you need a captain of the ship. Medina Shebelo Melech Haru Kasfino Bali Karvanit. So it's like a ship without a captain. That would go along with the words of the Emek Dovah, that when you have a prime minister who is elected by the people, then that person should be recognized as having the authority. Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with it at all. Indeed, it's something to be praised, because it then creates the law and order.
So who are you quoting before
them? The drosha of the run is the 11th drosha. And he explains the dilemma that we got from Shmuel, where people were complaining and Shmuel was not happy. He's saying that's because they didn't want the Bote Din at all. They just wanted to have a king. And that is not in order. Says the Netziv, we need the agreement of the people. It's got to be with the agreement of everybody that we have that Malchus. And if we don't, then that Malchus will not succeed. So here we have something which emerges, where you, although you have this theocracy where we run the state on Torah lines, within that concept there is room for the people to have their voice, to have their say, to be able to express their desires. I mean, if we look at the Gemara in Bavli, Bava Basra, Daf Samach, there it talks about the sort of case where the will of the people is paramount, where somehow people have then, in the example of the Gemara, took upon themselves various chumras. When the second temple was destroyed, Rabbi Pirushin Bistral, a lot of Pirushin, people who wanted to excel themselves and be more refined and take upon themselves more chumras. So they were saying, well, we can't now bring meat in our temple service, so we're going to stop eating meat altogether. There were people, we're going to stop drinking wine altogether because we haven't got the wine in the Beis HaMikdosh. Nitzfalah and Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua told them off. He said, they said, well, we haven't got the Mizbeach, and so therefore we can't eat meat or drink wine. So he said to them, in that case, you can't eat bread, because the Korban Mincha is bottled, so therefore, you know, why should you eat bread? And if you bring that argument to its logical conclusion, they said, yeah, well, okay, we can eat fruit. He said, no, you can't then eat fruit, because according to your argument, we got no Bikurim nowadays. So they said, okay, we'll drink water. He said, no, well, you can't even drink water, because there's no Nisach HaMayim. So they were silent. Omar Lohen, B'ni Boba Malachem, he says, you cannot be mournful more than the medium. You cannot be extreme and say we're mourning the Beis HaMikdosh to the extent that we're not going to eat meat and drink wine. She'ein gozrin gezeira la'tzibur. There is no such thing as a law being made by the rabbis on the Kehillah. Elohim kein rov tzibur yicholin lamod bo. Unless most people can withstand it, most people can accept it. This is the people power. Alokach omru chachomim. So you want to remember the destruction of the Beis HaMikdosh, fine, so you leave unplastered one amma by one amma on the wall as you enter the house. That's how you do it. But don't go to silly extremes by denying yourself meat and wine and so on, unless it's health reasons, but not because of this. This would be the wrong thing. So you see how the voice of the people comes into play. Sorry. The Rashbam in Baba Basra and Daf Samach there, he says, what does this mean? Kolomer v'chol hakol kulo kibros ha-gezeira. We're talking about when Chazal made some sort of gezeira, every single person was accepting it. If people could not accept it, no, you must scheme in. But then he says, we'll never have a situation where 100% agree to everything. But if we go by the majority, that is the way it will work and it will function satisfactorily. So, we will not have any gezeira imposed by the rabbis unless the majority of the people are able to accept it and take it on. And this is brought forward in the Sefer Mishpatei Kohei, who talks about modern day republics or methods of government, that really when the Torah is saying Son Tosim Alech HaMelech, it's not specifying that it has to be a form of monarchy, a king or a queen, that it can be something which is Kamal Chabez Chashmanoi. What, the Hasmoneans, they were not really kings, but they made themselves in charge in order to promote Torah values, and they did a very good job, even though they were not of Shevet Yehuda, and that's why they disappeared. That was their mistake. But nevertheless, what they were doing was promoting an authority with Torah values and doing things the right way.
So, but that did the Torah intend that there could have been a queen?
Well,
the
Rambam talks about appointing a melech rather than a malko. So I was talking about modern day. All right, if we have in this country a queen who, all right, the queen reigns, she does not rule. Are you saying that is going against the Torah? We're not saying that it's going against the Torah. Whether or not she's got lots of powers or not, we once discussed whether
we need to drive this.
Pardon?
Yeah,
there was the Gemara talks about Helena Malka, who made sure that her children were in the sukkah and so on.
You also said on the to king. Yeah, the biblical definition of melech is the opposite of melech, which has half, yes, is opposite of klum. So it means somebody of substance.
Yeah, somebody who's got the power to say off with his head.
Or something like
somebody
that.
Somebody who.
So melech is not really, that does not translate to king. It's somebody of substance.
Yes, you're right. The sort of king and queen we have nowadays, yes, whether it's in this country or whether it's Holland. There's been Malchus for many years, and Sweden, and some other countries. It's usually a figurehead, and the government is their government. So when we say our prayer for the royal family, we're saying, please guard her and deliver her from all trouble and sorrow, but may Hashem put wisdom into her heart and in the heart of all her counselors. So in that way, we are praying for the welfare of the government as well, whether it's David Cameron or anybody else who is the Prime Minister. We are giving them that respect. We're giving them Hakoras HaTov, that we can live in this country without having any problems, and that is something which is very important. You're right. The king of those days is not the same as the king of nowadays. Although the queen does have certain powers in this country, had there been a hung parliament in the recent election, the power would have been divested with her to choose a prime minister and party to run, or parties to run the government. Although the queen has no authority in terms of, there's no death sentence, although in the Commonwealth countries, some of them still have a death sentence, and the queen has the power to commute that sentence. So there are powers which are vested in the queen, yes?
You're saying that Melech is not necessarily a king, but any ruler. Does that mean that I cannot have a ruler of a Jewish state who's not a Kohen?
Why?
There is the question, does someone like Benjamin Netanyahu carry the halakhic status of a king? If he is elected and he is in charge, and the same goes like for President Obama. The problem is that Congress and Senate can overrule President Obama. After 4 years, or after two terms, the President of the United States can no longer be President. So there's no continuity. So what Rav Sternbuch writes in his Tshuvas V'Hanhogos is that the kavod we give, say, to the Queen of England is greater than what we would give to the President of the United States, because the royal family has continuity, they have a respect, they have a special levush malchus, whereas the President of the United States doesn't. And so the question there is, what do you make the brocha? There's a special brocha to say, if you see the sovereign. So many say that you do make the bracha when you see Her Majesty the Queen, but if you say you see President Obama, the Be'er Moshe in his Tshuvas, the Debuchina Rav says you do not make the bracha with a Shem and Malchus when you see the President of the United States. He doesn't attract the same respect, the same dignity, the same decorum like the royal family of the United Kingdom.
Also, like the Queen of England, like the King of Israel, the dynasty goes through their children automatically.
Yes, where they inherit the dynasty.
Yes, so it's going to be a different concept.
It is a different concept.
Well, it's just like so, any president.
Yeah, and the fact is that although the Queen of England is not elected in a democracy, if there would be a referendum tomorrow as to whether to carry on the monarchy or whether to have a referendum, it sounds like the chances are is that people will want the monarchy to continue. It's got a certain consistency. The present Queen has known many, many prime ministers since she came to power in 1952. Every week she meets on Wednesday at lunchtime the Prime Minister and discusses things. She gives advice based on her experience. So that is something which deserves a lot of respect. And therefore, when the Gateshead Leisure Centre opened in 1981, Gateshead Shiva closed up its forum and they all went there to attend the event, and they made the bracha for seeing the sovereign. So there you have it. In a form of democracy or malchus or monarchy at its best. Well, it's true that the monarch in this country doesn't have the day-to-day say in running the country, although she does give royal assent to every bill which comes through Parliament to become law, she doesn't anymore. Oh, well, we've got the constitutional experts here. But we won't...
Something you said.
Yes.
You said the Hashem were followers, were from leaders, but it was only lasted one or two generations. After that,
it's true.
After that, it dissipated. Right, no. The whole thing became less and less.
Sure. They disappeared. But at the time of the Nes Chanukah, there was this hislavos, there was this eagerness to fulfill not just the mitzvahs but all the hidurim, and people were Torah true, and they got credit for it. But their mistake, as the Ramban writes in Bereishis, he says they made the mistake because they were not from Shevet Yehuda, and Malchus belonged to the tribe of Judah.
So I was asking, should we only be able to elect Prime Minister
of Yehuda? Well, that is the question. Is a Prime Minister a Din of Melech nowadays? It seems not. I mean, the word Melech, and the way the Posset writes in Parsha Shoftim, is Ashe Yivcha Hashem Elokechoba. So if a country is not run on Torah lines, then we can't suggest that the Prime Minister of the state is under that category, Hashem Hashem Elokechobo, although he's Mekerev Achecho. When you go through Tanakh, and there were many kings, there were more bad ones than there were good ones.
Irreligious, because that's what it was.
Yeah, but the purpose of the king, though, is to uphold the theocracy of the state, is to maintain the Torah values, and not to go against them. And if he goes against them, then he is a bad king. I mean, we've got kings like King Achov, absolutely wicked. Kings who intermarried. I mean, his wife, Jezebel, was not Jewish. And yet, nevertheless, Eliyahu Novi, it says, ran in front of King Achav's chariot to give kovod l'malchus, to give dignity to the monarchy. And we know this already from Yosef. He came out from prison and he had his hair cut, and Rashi writes kovod l'malchus, it was Rosh Hashanah, but it was to give kovod to the king. And therefore we know from various sources how kovod l'malchus is indeed very important. Sorry.
That's how we prove that the king is different from the Mashiach. Clearly, he won't be elected, because if he's up for election, he'd never elect anyone. So the Mashiach, his dynasty will continue like the king.
Well, the Mashiach will be a melech.
Yes.
So will he be elected in the form of a general election? The criteria the Rambam describes in Hilchos Melachim is that he will bring peace to the world. He will succeed in Kibbutz Nidchei Yisrael, in bringing the ingathering of the exiles. So there will be these qualifications, but it will need the agreement of the people that he is the Melech HaMashiach, because you have these stories of Bar Kokhba we're going down that, but you do have tyrants as well who have been, as we said, democratically elected. I mean, do you make the bracha of when you see a king, if when you see someone like Gaddafi or Assad, these are tyrants, these were dictators, you don't make the bracha when you see them. But nevertheless, the Maral of Diskin writes, he says, it's a mitzvah saseh min haTorah to actually see the kovod which is given to the non-Jewish kings, because then you will learn how to give kovod to your own king of Sontos Simalech or Melech. So much so that when the Shiach comes, we will know how to behave, and we will be able to do a kal v'chomer that if we're giving kovod to these non-Jewish kings, so then we will know how to give kovod to our own, especially Melech Malchei Amlochei Makadosh Baruch Hu. There's an interesting story which happened at the time of the Tsar of Russia. The Tsar spoke to Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin, the son of Rav Chaim Volozhin, and he said to him, you know, I found out that you're not the only ones who say a prayer for the kingdom, for me. I heard that the German Jews are also saying a prayer, and they're praying for the Kaiser, and I hate the Kaiser. So how is it possible for you to be making a prayer for me and then to be making a prayer for the Kaiser? Surely there's a contradiction, and surely that makes it look in my eyes as if that the prayer that you're really making for me is not a suitable prayer at all. So how do you explain this? And if you look into the wordings, so he answered him, Rabbi Yitzchok Volozhin said to him, if you look at the actual wording which we say in our prayer for the royal family, he says the words which were used, and some Siddurim use these words, although the prayer for the royal family we use in this shul is not quite the same, but the original prayer is Hanosin Bayom Derech Uvalmayim Azim Nasivo. And it's a pasuk from Yeshaya in Perek Mem Gimel from Yeshaya. And what does this phrase mean? It's talking about the Hashem who makes the seas work, function properly, and the waves are flowing in different directions. How is this possible? Because there are sailors who have their yachts who are sailing from the west to the east, and they are trying to make sure that the wind is blowing in the direction which helps them sail to the east. But then you've also got sailors who are travelling on their yachts from east to the west, and they are adjusting their sails, trying to make sure that the wind helps them sail from the east to the west. And both of them are completing their journeys. And this is why this phrase, said Rabbi Yitzchok Volozhin, is put in the prayer for the royal family. Because you do got some kingdoms which are opposed to other kingdoms. And the Tsar of Russia is against the Kaiser of Germany, and the Kaiser is against the Tsar of Russia. But there is no contradiction, because each people is praying for their own sailors, as it were, who are in the wind. Excuse me. So the Gemara Bava Metzia in the 11th Perek talks about that the people are the ones who are regulating the prices, the weights and measures, the wages. Is there a minimum wage? And they have the powers of enforcement. They have the power to impose fines. So there you find that there is a democracy within the concept of the Jewish state. Even though it's run on Torah lines, you have within it the power of the people. However, in the Gemara itself, in the Bavli, in Bava Basra, Daf Ches, Daf Tes, seems to indicate that although you have a local town council running things, that you do have at the top a kind of beis din or an odom choshuv who will have a veto power to make sure that what is being brought about does not conflict with the Torah. So there is something which does limit the autonomy. For example, the Gemara in Bava Basra there is talking about two butchers who make an agreement with each other. They want to stitch up the market. One says, look, I'll run all the sales on the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and you do the Tuesday, Thursdays, Sundays, and that way we'll have the whole market stitched up. And so what they're doing is an agreement, which is a civil agreement according to law. But then it happened that one of them had an argument with the other, and this argument came before Rava, and Rava decided not to enforce the agreement which they had between themselves. Because if they had an agreement between themselves and one of them reneged on the agreement, Rava didn't feel it necessary to uphold it, because it did not necessarily conform to the national statute. So the Rashba writes in his Tshuvas in Chelek Aleph Tov Reish Zayin, he says, what is the ideal for a tzibur is that they appoint seven people who are in charge of the klal, and they are duly elected, and they will manage the various needs of the tzibur. And with those seven, of course, you're going to always get a majority amongst them if you have an odd number. And that is the way of the Torah, to have such a thing with a civil administration playing a role. Similarly, there are halachas as well, or minhagei hamokom, which only come about because of the will of the people. And it may even happen where Eliyahu HaNavi comes along one day and says, what you're doing is not right. And the example which is given is in the Rishalmi in Yevamos, where under the din of chalitza, where a shoe is used to perform this rite where unfortunately, sadly, a man dies leaving his wife childless, and his brother does not wish to carry out Yibum, so he does a chalitza, and this is done with a shoe. So there the Mishnah and the Gemara talk about a sandal, which can easily be translated as a sandal, and that this was being used for chalitza. And the Gemara there says that if Elyon Navi comes along and says you can't use this sandal, Ein Shomin Lo, we do not listen to him. Why? Because it became such a widely established practice and custom that a sandal was being used for chalitza instead of an ordinary shoe. So we say to Eliyahu HaNavi, sorry, this is the will of the people. And the people have decided that a sandal can be used for chalitza. It doesn't conflict with the Torah rule as such. And there the actual Gemara says, we see here a case of minag mevatel es halacha, where the custom is so widespread, it goes against the halacha. And there is another example in Bava Metzia, where it is the national practice for people to work from sunrise to sunset. So let's say I'm an employer, and I want to say to my employees, look, I want you to start working early before sunrise, or I want you to work late in the evening after sunset. And it's a contract, and between the employer and the employees, surely we have a rule, Tanai Shev Amam and Tanai Kayom, that if you have a contract, it holds. But if the workers afterwards say, we don't want to work before sunrise or after sunset, then the Gemara there says, Haminag Mevatel Es HaHalacha, we uphold what is the national practice, what is the will of the people, and that the employer cannot enforce that contract that they work too early or too late. Why? Because the overall population have the attitude that this is something which is out of the ordinary and not acceptable. So there again, you've got the power of the people. But these are not really instances where they override the halacha, even though the expression is used in the Gemara, ha-minag, ma-vasa, le-sa-halacha. It is a case where the minag is machriya the halacha. It's where the custom is actually deciding what the halacha is. And then you've got this interesting interplay then between what is going on between the laws of the Torah and the will of the people. But if the will of the people does not override what the Torah is saying, then the will of the people is paramount and democracy prevails. So there you've got that interesting balance. On a practical question, there was something which cropped up in the recent elections here in this country, in this very constituency. Actually, no, I'm wrong. We're here in Hendon. In Finchley and Golders Green. Oh, you are here. You are Finchley, Golders Green. Right. So in the constituency of Finchley and Golders Green, there were some Labour supporters who tried to drum up opposition to the Conservative candidate by trying to use a Torah argument. Apparently, the local Labour candidate is Jewish, and the local Conservative candidate was not Jewish, and the local certain Labour supporters were purported to be going around knocking on doors, telling people, you mustn't vote Conservative because this guy is openly in breach of the Sheva Mitzvah Spnei Noach as having been somebody who supported gay marriage in Parliament. And the question therefore arose, could one legitimately vote for the Conservative candidate? I'm not taking sides now as to which party one should vote for, but the question came up halakhically, can this happen? And a similar question actually did come up in March 2012 in America, in the New York State Senate seat, which was up for election, and there were a number of rabbis who'd actually signed a declaration saying that they should not support Councilman Lou Fiddler because he was involved with same-sex marriage or something like that. They said it's a chilul Hashem to vote for him, and therefore you may not vote for him. But, according to Rav David Lichtenstein in his newly published Sefer Headlines, this is not really the case in Halacha. this is not really, it's not a chilul Hashem. If you vote for somebody who is helpful to the Jewish community, if you vote for somebody who works on a platform to support Israel, then he shows in his sefer how there is nothing wrong whatsoever in voting for him.
There is something about the Shoah Ritzel B'nai Noach.
Yes.
When Lubavitch Rebbe was alive, he got Ronald Reagan to sign a document saying that the United States of America will uphold the Shoah Ritzel B'nai Noach. Does that sort of count for all time, or was that just... as long as Reagan was in charge?
I don't know what the circumstances are. I do know that Reb Moshe Feinstein once signed a letter to say that people should exercise their democratic right to vote, but he did not say anything about voting for candidates who uphold the Sheva Mitzvah Sbnei Noach. I've got a copy of his letter. What is interesting is this, that if somebody is a wicked person but has some good qualities, can you praise that person in what's called Chanufo for his good qualities? Or do we condemn that person completely? There is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Kimmel, which talks about when Hakel took place and there was a wicked king called Agrippas. And the Jews, it says, were complimenting him and they were criticized for it. Because he was such a wicked king, the Jews, it says, were worthy of being done away with. So they were unworthy of greeting the divine presence, it says. So there is this question of, to what extent can we give cover to such people? And in practice, what if some distinguished person comes into the shul, can the Gaboim give him an honour? Now,
for example, I don't want to be political, yes, but had Mr. Miliband been Prime Minister, he's somebody who openly declared there is no God.
He openly, publicly ate a bacon sandwich.
Yeah, but that, I think that's a believing Jew can eat bacon.
Yeah, but with him...
But to say there's no God...
But he was anti-Israel anyway. I'm talking about when the candidate is pro-Israel.
Right.
He was supporting this Palestinian cause.
Yeah.
And whereas Cameron was saying that the Israelis had the right to defend themselves last summer in the Gaza war. So the question didn't... I'm not playing politics, but Miliband wasn't being pro-Jewish anyway the way he was behaving.
So how could, if we say the Prime Minister, whoever he is, we must have caused him this state of a melee, if there is a Prime Minister of whatever country, whatever religion, who says there is no God, how can that conform to terrorizing?
True, but the way Reb Moshe Feinstein writes, he writes, he's asked this question, Igros Moshe Erachaim, Chelek Beis, Siman Nun Aleph. And there, the question is not about an election, but honoring a distinguished physician who comes into a shul, but he is somebody who is intermarried. So can we give him a kovod or not? That is the question which Reb Moshe addresses, which is really relevant to this. And he says, well, first of all, there seems to be a difference between different kinds of honor. In Siman Kuf Lamed Vav in the Shulchan Aruch, it says that you can give an aliyah to Balei Aveiro, right? Where if they've been engaged, say, in theft or in immorality or in eating forbidden foods, although he says you shouldn't call them up for the very parsha which relates to their sins. So when you're reading Acharei Mos about the Aroyos, you won't call them up if they're known to be breached for immorality, because that will embarrass them. But he says, but it says there in the Halacha and in the Mishnah, if they are famous and public for their Aveira, and they have no shame because of their Aveira, then you don't give them an Aliyah. Or if they are mocking Talmidei Chachomim or showing their abikosos, you do not give them an aliyah. But you can give them psicha, you can open Aron HaKodesh, you can give them hagba or galila, so you can give them an honor. He says nowadays many people are tinek shenishba, they're not mumma lahachis, they're not doing it because they are anti-religion, anti-God, it's because they don't know better and they still believe in the idea of Yiddishkeit, but those are people who are engaged in certain events. If they are not public averus, what about someone like the local Conservative MP who publicly lives with another man and so on? Well, Even according to that, says Reb Moshe, according to this, you can give an honor if that person has been doing good for Klal Yisrael. And it is clear and it is known that the reason why you are giving him this honor is not because he is intermarried or whatever. It's because he has done good for the Jewish community. And the case that he's talking about is a well-known doctor who had helped lots of people through their illnesses, saved lots of people's lives. So it's quite legitimate to give that person an honor, even though that person has intermarried. You give him a psicha, you give him a hagba, you give him a galila, and that's okay. Because most of these people who are called mumma, who are kofrim, are leteyavon. They're doing so because of their personal lust, and the yetzahara that they're meshuvah to, and it's not because of ideological reasons. And that is the balance to be struck. So according to that, it's perfectly legitimate to vote for an MP who supports the Jewish community, as he goes against anti-Semitism, supports the state of Israel and not condemning it, not to bring out sanctions and not promoting the causes of the Palestinian Arabs who just want to do away with us. So that is clearly the balance which is struck by the Pesach of Reb Moshe and as quoted by Rav David Lichtenstein. An interesting aspect of Halacha Lamaisa to wrap up this whole theme of democracy and the way it works in relation to a theocratic country. Thank you very much. Yes. 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 Yes.